A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rehm, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on September 29, 2002, entitled Hunger for God. The texts for the sermon are Romans 8, verses 12 through 27, and Luke 12, verses 13 through 21. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
I'm not going to read the reading from the present, except a few sentences, lines, in order to introduce what I want to reflect with you on this morning. Robert Solomon is a philosopher at some university in Texas. I came across this book recently and was enamored with the title, Spirituality for a Skeptic. I thought, well, that fits. And found out that he was a person who in his midlife woke up to the question about what is the meaning of life. He had lived, I think his background was Jewish, but a Jewish person can lead a totally secular existence as he did, non-observant altogether, and then coming to a point of wondering, what is the meaning of it all? And he discovered a larger, enhanced sense of life. And he came to think again about Nietzsche, the German philosopher nihilist, and Sartre, the French atheist existentialist, and Hegel, the German philosopher. And he began to think of them who were identified in our minds generally with modern atheism. He began to see them as thinkers who were trying to revalue and revise spirituality. And now in his midlife, as he's asking about the meaning of life, he's looking at them with new eyes and seeing that perhaps what they were doing in their day was what he finds it necessary for him to do in his day, and frankly, what we've been trying to do around here in our day. And he says, speaking of Hegel and Nietzsche, he says, they attempted to revalue and revise our concept of spirituality. Or to put it a different way, what both Hegel and Nietzsche tried to do was to naturalize spirituality. And when I read that, I thought, my goodness, that's what we've been talking about. Have you found it true that sometimes you become aware of something, or you learn a new word or a new idea, and suddenly you find it everywhere? And it was always out there, except it just sort of passed over. But suddenly you become aware of it, and you see it every place. And here I read Solomon, and he's talking now about naturalizing spirituality. To get away from the otherworldly religions and philosophies, and to reappreciate or re-enchant everyday life. And that word re-enchantment has been popping up all over the place. That, as a matter of fact, is what we are about. I mentioned it several times this summer. The re-enchantment of life. For us to come to a new appreciation of ourselves and our reality and God, in order that the human experience, the daily experience of our lives, the world, might be re-enchanted, that we might receive it with a new dimension of delight and awareness and gratitude and joy. So here's this philosopher down in Texas who's going back to these old 19th century philosophers, and he says, I think what they were trying to do was to re-enchant everyday life. The idea is to recombine spirituality with science and nature rather than play them off against each other. How often have we been talking about that here? To recombine spirituality with science and nature rather than that awful war that has existed for so long. Thus, for Hegel, nature is spiritual, and spirituality is nothing less than nature fully developed in us. Nature is spiritual, and spirituality is nothing less than nature fully developed in us. My goodness, I've been saying that. I must have been right. But I have been saying that. And this summer, you remember this summer, as we talked about creation as God's ecstasy, and creation as the garment of God, and as God, the source, the infinite source of all being, the mystery, outflowing and becoming embodied in the world, becoming embodied in the stuff of the cosmos. A story we're told that goes back 15 billion years. 15 billion years of the development of this process that eventuated in stars and stuff. And then just lately, on the scale of that 15 billion years, the appearance of life, of consciousness, of awareness, of the human being. The human being just arriving, as it were, in this long process of billions of years. And that human being, with awareness, becoming the intelligence of the cosmos, being able to rise above, to transcend the process and see the process, and to speak of the process, and to stand in awe and wonder of the process, to become the tongue of praise of the process, to become the consciousness of it all. This human being that we are, the finite embodiment of the infinite mystery, with a mind and a voice, so that here we are, human that we are, a finite matter which is one with the dust of the universe, because we are stardust after all, and yet stardust that's come alive, become conscious, become aware, able to wonder, stand in awe. And we human beings find within us a longing for something. The psalmist said it so beautifully, and it was sung so beautifully in our presence this morning. As the deer longs for living streams, so longs my soul for thee, O God. And the Apostle Paul, whatever he was trying to say in the 8th chapter of Romans, in that very complex letter, when he was giving expression to that amazing experience he had, there was something in him that recognized that there was something in God in him. And there was something in God in him that was reaching out to God beyond him. The Spirit sighing within us, or longing within us. And Jesus, in this little story I read, where somebody says, hey, settle this dispute. And he says, this dispute isn't worth worrying about. Let me tell you about the farmer whose crops were so good. Well, let me tell you about the investor whose stocks were so good that they were going through the ceiling. And he began to plan his future in terms of wonder and glory. And then, in the midst of it all, it was over. And Jesus said, you really ought to be concerned about being rich toward God. But the point of those lessons is simply my contention that there's a hunger for God in the depths of every human being. And that's not surprising, because after all, we are made of God stuff. We are the consciousness and the awareness of the finite creation, which is the embodiment of the infinite God, the infinite source of all being that is mystery beyond us, flowing out into the concretion of creation, of which we are the conscious inhabitors, become co-creators, having within us a longing for something, a longing for God. And why shouldn't we have a longing for God? For we're made of God. We are inspirited by God. God is our home. God is our source, the source of our being. Paul quoted an old pagan philosopher, in God we live and we move and we have our being. And someone like Robert Solomon, studying the 19th century philosophers, and we've talked about them all here, Feuerbach and Marx and Freud and Nietzsche, and we identify that period with modern atheism. And then Solomon looks again and he says, I wonder if they weren't just trying to find a way to say God in a world that had drastically changed. Because you see, our storybook arose at a time when the conception of everything was totally different than our conception of everything. The sense of ultimate reality was altogether different in the expressions of the Hebrew prophets, or in the New Testament letters of Paul, or in the speech, than the talking of Jesus. There was a totally different conception of the reality of which we're a part. And so maybe it was necessary for this old world, on its way in its human development, to go through that period, that bath wash of atheistic, atheistic thinking, which sent such tremors through the church. An atheistic movement that alienated scores and scores and scores of people and generations. A modern atheism that has affected the academic community and the intelligentsia of the world today, so that the church becomes a defensive community trying to hold on, but too often trying to hold on with an old way of thinking and speaking, so that it doesn't resonate with the reality of our present world. And then Robert Solomon says, maybe those atheistic philosophers were simply trying to naturalize spirituality. Maybe they were trying to learn how to say God in their day. Because A-theism does not necessitate atheism. And that's not just a little play on words. Because what the modern period did was to reject a theistic conception of God that was in the tradition. The idea of that supernatural being up there in control, running things. The God who interrupted the process on occasion. the God who could intervene here or there. And in a world that had become so convinced of the findings of the natural sciences, a God out there doing that kind of thing just didn't make a lot of sense. And so, to a lot of people who thought about it, there was alienation, and there was movement out of the church. Bishop Spong would say, believers in exile. I believe that the largest part of the congregation of Christ Community Church is out of the church. If they could only hear the good word, they'd be back in. Because it is possible to say God and to have a spiritual existence in our day without being, without adopting a kind of worldview that doesn't make sense anymore. Down deep in the human heart is a hunger for God. But the heart cannot long rest where the mind cannot follow. That is, if the mind is operative at all, if one is thinking at all, the heart cannot long rest where the mind cannot follow. And so many have been alienated. And I come to this today. I decided long ago to speak about the hunger for God today because I knew I would be coming back, and then next week David Ray Griffin would be here. And David Ray Griffin is the one who has been so stimulating to me. He was introduced to me by Howard Vintill in a book, Religion and Scientific Naturalism, which is a very fine book, in which he tries to do what Solomon speaks of here, in which he tries to say God in a conception of reality which is consistent with all that we know. In other words, the best understanding we have of ultimate reality, given that, how do you say God? That's the thing that David Ray Griffin has worked at. His latest book, which I've quoted here, Reenchantment Without Supernaturalism. You see, in that concise title, he says volumes. The reenchantment of the world. That's what Solomon speaks about here. He says that's what Hegel was about, Nietzsche was about. Trying to find the reenchantment of every day. Because what was happening was that the God, that old image of God and that old conceptuality was so challenged. And there were those who were living then, alienated, without any sense of the reality of God. And yet, you can't wipe out that deep hunger for God, because we are, after all, the embodiment of God. So if that infinite mystery has overflowed into the concrete creation, and if we are the voice, the awareness, the intelligence, if we are the human beings who are the finite embodiment of God, then is it any wonder that there's a longing for God within us? Because after all, God is our source and God is our home, and we cannot be at home in this world. We cannot be at home with ourselves unless we are at home with God, unless we have a sense of the reality and the presence of God, in the reality and the presence of all that constitutes our being. And so we have an opportunity next week to have in our midst someone who is working hard at that. How do you naturalize spirituality so that our spiritual life isn't some otherworldly thing? So that our spiritual life isn't some Sunday business. So that our spiritual life is not some compartment in our being, but doesn't affect the totality of our everyday. Rather, that our spiritual being is the expression of our authentic being, living with an awareness and a wonder and a gratitude and an amazement at the miracle of life. Because you see, I repeat myself, but I want you to sense this. God breathes in you. And it's not a question of whether or not God is in you. It's only a question of your awareness. Let me tell you about Marina. She was our guide in St. Petersburg, Russia for 5 days. She's a lovely, lovely person. It's a beautiful woman, articulate, impeccable English, bright, knowledgeable, great humor, delightful spirit. And we all fell in love with her. And as we went day after day, one day on the bus she said, "That yellow church, I was baptized there." So I said to her later, "So you were baptized?" "Yes," she said, "I was." I said, "What year?" A question you must never ask a woman. She said, 1959. I said, "Oh, 59. So you were baptized in 59. She said, "Yes, my parents, they weren't religious at all." And she said, "And I'm not religious, and my friends are not religious." She said, "But I did have my 12-year-old daughter. I had her baptized." I said, "You did?" She said, "Just in case." And when we came off of monastery grounds, she went like this, and I said, "I saw that." And as we gathered in Oslo a couple Sunday nights ago as our little group in reflection, I said, "I am convinced more than ever after this wonderful engagement with the Russian people in that Eastern rite of the Orthodox tradition that even that was intentionally tried to be stamped out since 1970, but can't be stamped out. I am just so convinced of the ineradicability of the spiritual being, because Marina is a spiritual being, a beautiful human being. And God is in that woman. And she is resonant with God. And I would love to have the opportunity to pursue that more." I said, "What? Tell me about your spiritual life. Tell me about..." "Well, with my friends, we talk about ideas." I think what she was saying is, "We do grapple with meaning." And she says, "We have suffered. And suffering can lead to a spiritual sense." Once again, you see, here's a non-observant Russian woman who is every bit modern, contemporary, wonderful, delightful, totally non-religious, but she's not non-spiritual. And it seems to me the only thing she lacks is the awareness of the source of the beauty of her humanity, of her spirituality. There is a hunger for God within the human breast. And those who may seem farthest from any kind of practice or observance, nonetheless, at some time or other, must, as Robert Solomon, come to say, "What does it mean? What does it mean?" And hopefully find some way through the maze. He concludes finally in the end, "Thoughtful love of life is spiritual being." Well, yes. Thoughtful love of life. Because life is gift. And to be able to live with awareness and intentionality and appreciation and gratitude, to be able to lift a glass to the wonder, miracle, glory, and joy of life, to be able to look at a sunset and an evening star, the smile of a child and the embrace of human connection, to be able to live not just in the morning, awake, breakfast, work, dinner, back to sleep, awake, breakfast, dinner, sleep, but to live with awareness of every moment of every day, that it is God-filled, that it is God-breathed, that we are the embodiment of that infinite source of being, full of grace and creativity, to look at it all and to live with that constant sense of wonder and amazement. That is to come to the awareness of the roots of the hunger within us. And finally, to be at home in our skin, in our world, because we are the children of God.